Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 6 years ago, a Colorado baker refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple. He cited religious beliefs as grounds for his decision. The gay couple objected and filed a lawsuit. The U.S. Supreme Court this week issued a narrow ruling in the case that leaves unresolved whether a business owner's religious beliefs or free speech rights are legal grounds for refusing service. Washington Post reporter Robert Barnes has been covering this issue. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
The Supreme Court ruled on the process used by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission in deciding the case. What was the court's objections to the process?
Well, the court was worried about some comments that were made by some commission members that the court said demeaned the baker, his name is Jack Phillips, his religious beliefs, and that one of the commission members had said that religion, you know, often is credited when someone is actually just racist, and cited a couple of examples of that. And the court said that that went too far, and that it meant that Jack Phillips did not really have a panel of neutral adjudicators. So, as you say, it was a very narrow decision that revolved completely around what the Colorado Civil Rights Commission did, not really the big questions in the case.
Was the baker and his legal team interested? I mean, was that what they were shooting for? Was this narrow kind of a ruling, or were they looking for that larger issue too?
No, they were looking for the larger issue too. This is sometimes the Supreme Court gives a decision that neither side has asked for,
and that's
what happened in this case. The baker, interestingly, somewhat changed before it got to the Supreme Court. There was a lot of arguments about that this was a violation of his religious rights and the rights to exercise his religion. That changed more when they started arguing the case at the Supreme Court to focus on free speech and whether he could be forced to use what he called his artistry to produce something that he didn't believe in. And the court really didn't get into either one of those, although two justices, Clarence Thomas and the new justice, Neil Gorsuch, said that he would have a good case on the free speech grounds.
The thing is, he was being asked to make a wedding cake. Correct me if I'm wrong, Robert, but he would make a cake for them, but not a wedding cake for them, right?
That's correct, and that's exactly what some of the liberal justices said. They said that this wasn't about a gay wedding cake. It was about a wedding cake. And if he makes a wedding cake for a heterosexual couple, then under California's anti-discrimination law, he must also make a cake for a gay couple. And so that was, you know, what the left side of the court argued for, but there just wasn't a majority for either one of those positions, at least in this case.
Mm-hmm. So it brought about mixed emotions on both sides, right?
It did. You know, it was a 7-2 decision, which sounds broad, but sometimes the narrowest decisions are the ones that get the most justices to sign on to, for obvious reasons. If you look sort of underneath the reasoning here, I think, you know, it seems like a much closer call. And we saw that Justice Kennedy, who wrote the opinion and has also written all of the court's opinions that support gay rights, he and the Chief Justice, John Roberts, did not really address either one of those issues in either the main decision or in the sort of the concurring and the dissenting opinions.
We're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court ruling this week, a narrow ruling that addressed the process by which the Colorado Civil Rights Commission decided a case, the case of the Masterpiece Cake Baker refusing to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple. My guest is Robert Barnes. He's a Supreme Court reporter for The Washington Post. Coming up, we're going to hear from constitutional experts and from both sides of the issue. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Robert, this really didn't set any kind of precedent. It was more of a slap on the wrist to the Civil Rights Commission in Colorado.
Well, I think the only precedent would set is that, you know, there has to be respect given to someone's religious beliefs in one of these kinds of cases. And, you know, I think everyone on the court agreed with that. If you look at this case, what you really see in what Justice Kennedy has written is, you know, on the one hand, on the other, just about every sentence he wrote about the importance of people being able to express their religion and exercise their religion and that that should be respected. He followed it up with a sentence that said the rights of gay people have to be respected too, and that it's certainly within a state's ability and power to add gay people to the list of people that can't be discriminated against, such as for race or gender. And so he really seemed to try to walk a line there. You know, he said in the opinion that he's worried about the idea that someone would put up a notice in their shop window saying, we don't provide certain services to gay couples. You know, the other thing to keep in mind is only, I think, a little fewer than half the states protect someone because of their sexual orientation. And in those other states, then these vendors would be free to turn down providing services for same-sex couples.
Mm-hmm. Including in Ohio, where there's legislation pending to provide those rights. We're going to talk about that in more detail later on in the program. The court is set to consider this week whether to review a Washington State Supreme Court decision that a florist could not legally decline to provide flowers to a same-sex wedding there. What's the deal in that case?
Well, that case very closely mirrors this one. But the issue of religious animosity seems to be missing in that case. Hmm. So that was a unanimous decision by the State of Washington Supreme Court that this florist, her name is Baronelle Stutzman, had violated the state's anti-discrimination law when she told a longtime customer that she would not provide flowers for his wedding ceremony. He'd been a customer for a decade. She had served him in many other capacities and says that she will continue to serve gay people and employs gay people, but that she won't do it for a wedding. And so in one way, it would be a perfectly logical follow-up for the case, but there are some who think that the court is not going to want to take another case on this right away.
Why?
Well, because it's just been through one. It says that it wants to see more this issue evolve more in the lower courts. I think the court is just sort of, you know, doesn't want to face it again in some ways. But it is, it's, you know, going to be something that the court has to look at. The court could also send this case back to the state of Washington and say, see if our ruling in this masterpiece case changes your mind or changes the way this case should be looked at.
Hmm. Except that it was so narrow on the behavior of the Civil Rights Commission and not on the points of the question.
Yes. Well, that's what the state of Washington argues, says that there was no religious animosity in the Washington Supreme Court's deliberations, and so it really wouldn't affect that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a way sometimes for the court to buy time when it wants to see how things turn out. And so some think, and the lawyers for the florist say that at a minimum, the court should return this case to Washington for more work.
And tell me again why there were two dissenters on this narrow ruling. Why wasn't it unanimous?
Well, Justices Ginsburg and Sotomayor said that there wasn't really religious animosity on the part of the commission. They sort of seemed to think that it was a bit of a stretch for the rest of the court to say that there was. And they also said that it didn't much matter, that there were other people who looked at this. The courts looked at this decision as well, and that there was no religious animosity there. I mean, their view is that a business that's open to the public must serve all the public under the public accommodation laws of that state. And so for them, this was not a hard decision.
Have you seen or has there been any reporting on whether or not these types of cases are popping up around the country? Is this a thing?
These cases are all around the country. They involve all sorts of wedding vendors, photographers, videographers. There's even a calligraphy company in Arizona that says it doesn't want to provide invitations to same-sex weddings. And so it's clearly something that's not going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue in this case that bothered the court was that there had been sort of a test case. Someone went around to other bakeries in Colorado and said that he wanted cakes that were anti-same-sex marriage,
mm-hmm.
With a message on them that said that there was biblical reasons not to have same-sex marriage. And the bakeries turned him down. And when he complained to the Civil Rights Commission, the Civil Rights Commission said that those bakeries were within their rights to refuse that kind of service and that kind of message. And so to some members of the court, that showed a double standard on the part of the Civil Rights Commission.
And the Civil Rights Commission, was it like considered hate speech or something like that?
And said that they said that the bakeries didn't have to do it and that it wasn't the same thing, that these bakers wouldn't have provided that cake for anyone and wouldn't provide similar cakes for anyone. And that's different from a wedding cake that a baker would make for a heterosexual couple, but wouldn't make for a gay couple. Now, there is a question that in this free speech, what if the couple had asked for a message on it, for instance, that said, you know, God loves same-sex marriage?
Mm-hmm.
Would that be a different kind of case? We don't know. It never got to that point. The couple said that, and everyone agrees, that as soon as the couple said, we want a cake to celebrate our wedding, then that was it. The baker said, I'm sorry,
It didn't matter whether there were going to be words on it at all.
That's right. They never got into any discussion about exactly what the cake would look like.
Huh.
There are sort of a number of reasons why this wasn't the best case in the world for the Supreme Court to take up to make this kind of decision.
Robert Barnes, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Robert Barnes is a Supreme Court reporter for The Washington Post. He's been covering the Masterpiece Cake decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. It was a narrow decision, didn't really address the issues of whether or not the baker had a right based on religious beliefs to deny or to not make a cake for a gay couple's wedding. We'll continue our conversation when we return. And if you have a question or comment and want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about religious freedoms and the LGBTQ protections. After the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of a Colorado baker who refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple, it was a narrow ruling. It didn't have anything to do with the issue of religious freedom or freedom of speech. But we're going to talk about what it suggests going forward. Joining us is Ohio State Law Professor Ruth Kolker. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ann.
And by phone, Director of the Center for Religious Liberty at the Family Research Council, Travis Weber. Welcome, Travis.
Thank you.
We understand that there are mixed emotions about this ruling, Travis. In the short term, it's a victory for your organization. You support the religious rights of the baker to deny the gay couple their wedding cake. But longer term, what do you make of the Supreme Court's ruling?
Well, I think it'll have a wider impact, and it's really a positive win for faith in the public square and people who just want to live out their beliefs free from marginalization and discrimination and hostility at the hands of government or even social actors. I mean, really, you look at the basis of the ruling, there's a lot where Justice Kennedy and joined by a number of other justices focused on the hostility and animus directed at the fact that these were religious beliefs motivating Mr. Phillips' desire to operate his business according to his conscience. And so that is really sort of the standard here, the bar that's been set and the markers which have been laid down, which goes back to the Obergefell ruling where Justice Kennedy said, religious beliefs, you know, people can still follow them and have a role in the public square, and that's all we're dealing with here. We're not dealing with any other issue.
Well, I mean, that's not really exactly what he said, because they really only ruled on how the behavior, how the commission commented on the case when it was moving through the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Right, Ruth Kolker?
Right. The court doesn't rule that Jack Phillips, the owner of Masterpiece Cake Shop, has an unfettered right to deny services to people because of their sexual orientation. Even narrowly stated, the court does not rule that as a matter of right, Mr. Phillips can say, I will not produce a cake with, you know, a picture of two gay men. The court does not go that far at all. It's an unusually narrow ruling because the religious hostility allegedly came from the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. They were the ones who were the sort of bad actors here. And so it's a very unusual set of facts. I can't think of any other case where a court focuses on comments from a civil rights commission to conclude that religious animus exists.
Yeah, I was calling it a kind of a slap on the wrist earlier to the commission. That's the affected party in all of this.
Yes, it's extremely insulting to the members of the Civil Rights Commission, one of whom made a comment that the court found to be hostile to religion. And then there were other ways in which the Colorado Civil Rights Commission distinguished this case from some other test cases. But there was nothing at all said about the unfettered right of Mr. Phillips to, in the future, decide that he will not produce a wedding cake for a same-sex couple.
Travis Weber, you said that a bakery should have to sell a cake to a gay customer but not be forced to make a wedding cake for a gay marriage. What's the difference?
Well, one deals with a true exercise of one's religious belief, and one is simply a matter of serving anyone who comes in your shop. And this is what Mr. Phillips has said, and this is what many of the people who we're supporting their ability to exercise their faith publicly. So exercising their faith means following their conscience, not, shutting down their shops, the access to their shop for people who walk in. And this is very important to understand, that Mr. Phillips would not want to create this cake, even if it was someone who was not same-sex attracted walking in seeking to buy it. The point is, he's objecting to the cake for the same-sex wedding ceremony. Meanwhile, he would sell a cake for a man-woman wedding ceremony, even if the customer purchasing it was same-sex attracted. This is crucial to the whole case, and I would agree with the narrow nature of the ruling. I think it's significant, though, for the way the issues are dealt with culturally and how we talk about religion. You know, Justice Kennedy quoted his passage from Obergefell in which he said religious beliefs on same-sex marriage are not to be denigrated. And, you know, this is really what we're fighting for now in terms of the ability to live side by side with people who differ, fully express ourselves and not be marginalized and just because you hold a certain belief. So, yes, the ruling's narrow, but I think it'll have a positive impact on the ability of people to live with one another because we can say, look, these religious beliefs are valid. People who hold them are valid. Meanwhile, you have others who want to enter into same-sex marriages and believe that's good and proper. Okay, you know, and Mr. Phillips exemplified this in the way he conducted himself. And so he just wanted to follow his conscience, not creating the cake for the ceremony. He didn't want to not serve anyone. You know, he's happy to serve anyone who walked into a shop.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in the Masterpiece Cake case out of Colorado. Cake baker refused to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple. Said he'd bake them anything else they wanted but the wedding cake. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Dave in Granville, you're on the air.
Hi,
Dave.
Good morning, Ann. So I think my comment is particularly apropos given the two guests on at the moment. And that is, I do agree that religious freedom is one of the cornerstones laid out for us in the Constitution in terms of separation. But I would like to see some kind of litmus test so that people could know going into these businesses whether or not they would support providing these kind of services to same-sex marriage. I guess what I'm saying is I want to know if I go into a coffee shop or a bakery or a calligraphy store, mm-hmm. whether or not I want to spend my money there when I walk in the door. Quite frankly, I will start to not patronize businesses that don't support providing these kind of services, mm-hmm. and let the economic incentives drive the way people behave.
Ruth Kolko, do businesses have a right to play that close to the vest if they want?
Well, obviously, it depends upon where you live.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
As you've earlier stated, in Ohio, we don't have this kind of public accommodation statute. But let's assume for a moment that we were on vacation in Boulder, Colorado, which I think most of us would enjoy. I think the court was very clear that Masterpiece Cake Shop cannot put a sign on its front door that says we do not serve gay people. I think they can't put a sign on their store saying we do not make cakes for gay weddings. I mean, there is nothing in the court's holding that gives them the latitude to make that statement publicly and deny their services on that basis. I understand that Travis wishes the court had rendered that decision. I understand that's what Mr. Phillips argued to the Supreme Court. That is not what the court decided. It was very clear that it did not decide that. That the court made it clear that people do have a right to have equal access to good services and public accommodations when you have a state statute like this one. Dave asks a good question, which is in Ohio or Columbus where we live, we do not know when we walk into a store what a store owner's positions are because they are free to do really whatever they want.
Because there's no restrictions.
There's no restrictions and no public accommodation mm-hmm. statute in Columbus, in Ohio. If there were such a statute, then, you know, maybe we could start making more inquiries on that basis. But this court rules that you can't put that sign in front of the store at this time, that this Colorado is entitled to enforce its statute to preclude such a sign.
Because it didn't rule on it. It let stay that decision. It ruled only on...
It only ruled on the very narrow basis as whether the Colorado Civil Rights Commission itself engaged in acts yeah. of religious hostility. And it said the majority says nothing to preclude the state of Colorado from continuing to enforce its public accommodation statute to prevent stores from putting a sign out front saying gay is not welcome or gay wedding cake buyers not welcome or, you know, however you want to mm-hmm. phrase it. I have in front of me a sentence from the court. Which it emphasizes the importance of states being allowed to protect from what the court calls community-wide stigma, you know, that obviously would exist if such a sign could be plastered on the front of a store.
Dave, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Maddie in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Maddie.
Hi. I just had a question for the co-host there. The Supreme Court defined marriage as a religious institution, and I'm curious if they would agree that a new definition of marriage now is more of a civil union rather than purely a religious institution.
Yeah, I had the same question. Isn't marriage a civil act, a wedding, a civil act under law? Travis Weber, what does it have to do with religion anyway?
Well, you know, wedding is a very religiously significant event for many people of many different religions, and many people seek to be married properly in the sight of God, and for many people, that's the real focus. And this goes back to the dawn of time, you know. Now, our country has, you know, we have religious significance to weddings in terms of being presided over by various religious officials, but you do register with them with the government, and the government decides that certain things are marriages and certain things are not. I mean, the government still doesn't recognize all sorts of things that people may want to be marriage but are not. And so there's this tension, you know, and I'll just say, with respect to the previous caller, I do think that the right way to sort the issue out is to let people live out their faith. I would prefer Jack Phillips be allowed to hang a sign saying, I don't want my conscience to be infringed upon. And we support the right of business owners, regardless of how they fall on this issue. We think that the business that didn't want to create the other cake the commission decided, the one that was opposed to same-sex marriage, we would support that business's right to say, look, we don't want to be involved in this, supporting that. Okay, but the same right applies for Mr. Phillips. So the marketplace, broadly speaking, I think is a good way to sort a lot of these differences out where people differ on these matters. But yeah, people have religious views on marriage. I mean, this goes back many, many, many years before any of us were alive. And that's, you know, the change and shift in that and what government would seek to impose on people who hold to certain views the government doesn't approve of are, you know, is the real issue. And we don't want to see any government acting with hostility that it reacted towards Jack Phillips here.
So I'm thinking about these signs on the windows again. It harkens back to Jim Crow era when, hey, we're perfectly allowed to say we don't serve blacks.
Right. Yeah, but there's one thing here. Jack Phillips is not seeking to do that. You know, like I said, this is important for people to grasp, but he would not create the same-sex wedding cake even if it was a heterosexual customer coming in a shop and wanting to purchase it. Meanwhile, he would sell a wedding cake between a man and a woman if it was a gay man or someone from the LGBT community wanting to come in, purchase it, organize it, the ceremony, etc.
For a heterosexual wedding. Okay.
Yeah, but
right,
that's
the distinction is the issue, not the person.
Okay.
But that's beside the point. We have a very simple...
It's not beside the point.
Okay, well, let me finish, please.
Yes.
We have this very simple principle called disparate impact, and we all know...
Disparate impact.
Right. So okay. We all know that, of course, such a sign would have a disparate impact against same-sex couples because they're going to be disproportionately the ones inclined to go into a store and request a wedding cake. Most of us aren't so lucky to have someone else gratuitously decide to buy our wedding cake, right? That's an expensive purchase. The court ends its opinion. This is the very last clause of the court's opinion, the Justice Kennedy opinion. The court says, without subjecting gay persons to indignities when they seek goods and services in an open market, this court cared about those indignities. No one could claim. Well, I believe this court would agree that it creates an indignity on gay people to have a sign out front saying we do not make cakes for gay weddings. That would be an affront, an indignity to gay people. And it doesn't matter who seeks to request to purchase that cake. That cake is for celebrating this public event. And the purpose, I think the court would agree that such a sign violates the public accommodation statute, you know, because of its disparate impact on the gay and lesbian community. So, again, I understand that Travis would like someone to be able to put out that kind of a sign. I think there's nothing in the court's opinion suggesting such a sign would be permissible.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like for Jack Phillips to be able to follow his beliefs, and it's indignity to him to tell him, no, you can't, and we're going to basically force you out of business. I mean, it's lost, you know, in this case, many people don't understand that there was a bakery half a mile away that would happily bake this cake. 67 in the Denver area on one internet search would happily bake this cake. Meanwhile, they're forcing Jack Phillips to do this at loss of risk, loss to his business, loss of financial support for his business.
How would it there be a loss of business? I don't
because
get
now,
that.
If the ruling stands,
yeah.
Now for now, I think this is going to be sorted out in the days to come. But he's going to probably start to bake wedding cakes again and seek to follow his conscience in doing so. But if the Supreme Court had not issued the ruling the other day, he had stopped baking wedding cakes altogether, right? 40% of his business.
Why?
So, because the Colorado Commission had ordered him not to, or we're gonna sanction you under law. So
as long as he discriminated against.
He's not going to compromise his conscience. Okay. So this is government telling you, compromise your conscience to stay in business. And that's really our focus here. I mean, that's what we care about. we want everyone to be able to obtain what they want to obtain in a marketplace where people differ on things, right? So we would support a business that only wanted to do same-sex wedding cakes from holding themselves out that way, advertising that way. Look, this is our, the way we're going to run our business. And there are other cases in other contexts popping up. But really, we want people to be able to follow their convictions. And we're in a world of different convictions now, but follow them in the public square. And I know, you know, there are particulars that are going to be sorted out, but broadly speaking, we want everyone to be able to follow their conscience.
Would there be, in that world, rules against people maybe lying to a baker and saying it's not for a same-sex wedding? And when it is, I mean,
yeah, I mean, conceivably you could have that, you know, but I just think that's broadly the best approach where you have people of different convictions and we're trying to find a way to honor everyone's convictions broadly to say, look, people running small businesses should be able to follow their convictions. I mean, that's what the bakeries that the commission ruled on in the other cases where they said you're allowed to refuse a cake you find offensive because it opposes same-sex marriage. And we're fine with that. But Jack Phillips deserves the same right, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine in a world in which we don't protect against sexual orientation discrimination. But the Supreme Court made it clear that states are entitled to protect against sexual orientation discrimination. And the court agreed with the assertion that when one isolated baker does not make a cake for one couple, even if that couple could go down the street to purchase that cake, that that act by that baker subjects gay persons to indignities when they see goods and services in open market. And this gets a little bit back to Dave's question earlier. This isn't exactly where Dave was going, and I don't know Dave's sexual orientation, but let's assume for a second that Dave is gay. I think Dave might be saying to us, when I walk into a bakery, I want to know before I enter the door that I won't be faced with this indignity to be told that I can't buy this product because of my sexual orientation. And so the court is trying to protect people from that indignity and understands that one isolated incident has this massive, larger effect of subjecting people to these broader indignities. So, I mean, that's why many people in the GLBT community are happy with some aspects of the Kennedy opinion, because they like the fact that seven members of the Supreme Court signed the Kennedy opinion acknowledging that gay people's indignity suffers when we allow such signs to bar them from purchasing products.
Travis Weber, I want to thank you. We have to let you go, and I do appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Travis Weber is director at the Center for Religious Liberty at the Family Research Council. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about religious freedoms and LGBTQ protections after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of a Colorado baker who refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple. Of course, it was a very narrow ruling that didn't have anything to do with his religious freedoms and denying making that cake for that gay couple. It had to do with his treatment by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission in the process of their adjudication of the case. Still with us is OSU Law Professor Ruth Kolker. Joining us by phone is the Executive Director of Equality Ohio. It's a nonprofit organization advocating for LGBTQ rights. Elena Jokum, welcome to the show, Elena.
Thank you.
Mixed emotions about this ruling?
Yeah, mixed emotions. I think we are disappointed that the discrimination that happened in this particular case went unchecked. But I'm very encouraged that the court, seven justices of the court, affirmed the importance of non-discrimination protections and said that, look, when you operate a business in the public sphere, you have certain obligations, and one of them is that you cannot discriminate against LGBTQ people in states where there are laws protecting LGBTQ people. I think that that is very encouraging to hear from the court in this decision.
I received two questions from listeners. One had to do with Could the same be said for medical procedures? Maybe there's something related to a medical procedure that somebody could deny somebody because it has to do with a same-sex union. Another one was, could a baker refuse to bake a cake for a white nationalist? Maybe I didn't see the whole question, but let's just say somebody who wants to use a symbol of white nationalism on a cake, could a baker refuse to do that? Ruth Kolker?
Well, those are two really different questions.
Right.
Okay, so the first
I just had to spit them out while I could remember them.
Okay, yeah. I wrote them down so I won't forget either. The medical question, we have a little bit of case law on that in a somewhat different context. We have a case from a state that has non-discrimination statutes of various sorts, and women would want to go to a pharmacy to receive their contraceptive prescription. And the pharmacist would refuse to give her the prescription because of his religious beliefs. And that's a version of sex discrimination or something. You know, it's obviously not a sexual orientation issue. And the courts in those cases have said that the pharmacist cannot allege that his religious freedom is violated when we force him to fill the prescription, that when he chooses the profession of being a pharmacist, he has an obligation to serve the public in a way that, in, like in this case, would not cause someone's rights to be denigrated. And we can't just say to her, go down the street to your local CVS that might fill that prescription. So the pharmacist does have an obligation to make sure that that prescription gets filled. We could imagine an emergency room situation, right, where maybe someone's HIV positive and they come in for emergency treatment. You know, a doctor would not be able to say, I think that, you know, gay people get HIV because of some bad sign of God, I mean, you know, sign of the devil or something like that. You would have to treat that person and not be able to use your religious beliefs as an excuse. Because the court totally validates the enforcement of these statutes. We have to remember that. Jack Phillips did not earn the right to discriminate. He just earned the right to be free from the Colorado Civil Rights Commission discriminating against him on the basis of their alleged racial religious hostility. So I think that in states with such statutes, we should feel comfortable that we would be able to receive goods and services without discrimination, and there are no defenses available unless someone is like a minister and they're performing a religious service in a religious context, which everyone agrees could still go forward.
So, Elena Jokum, there are no such protections in Ohio. Ohio House is working on a bill, House Bill 160, that would protect LGBTQ people from housing and employment discrimination. Would that go far enough? I mean, what do you think about what's pending in the General Assembly now?
Yeah, that's right, Anne. We don't have these protections in Ohio yet, and it's hard for many people to believe that it's 2018 and we don't have these basic fundamental non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ people yet, which is why it's long past time to pass the Ohio Fairness Act, HB 160, which you speak about. And what's great about HB 160 is it just adds sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes everywhere else in Ohio's code where we currently protect protected classes. And existing religious exemptions that are already part of our non-discrimination law continue to apply equally to all protected classes. It's quite a simple law, but it really is time for sexual orientation and gender identity to be expressly protected under state law. We do have 20 cities that have local non-discrimination protections in place, but that actually only covers about 20% of Ohioans, so only giving a small percentage of the population access to some remedy and not as robust of remedies as the Ohio Fairness Act would provide. So it's high time we pass this.
As far as those religious exemptions go, what are they, Ruth Kolker?
I'm not familiar with the specific Ohio religious exemptions, but in general, what the religious exemptions certainly do is they protect people who are religious actors, you know, like ministers, et cetera. In some states, they will allow someone to seek an accommodation of their religious beliefs if you can do so in a way that doesn't cause the person who's requesting the service to not get the service. So in a pharmacy example, for example, I could, if being a Roman Catholic, I felt that it was abhorrent for me to prescribe certain contraceptives. When someone made such a request, I could seamlessly and quietly walk to my coworker and say, would you please take care of this for me? Because then the person would still receive the service and wouldn't necessarily even be aware of why I asked my coworker to take care of it for me. But that what the courts have tended to say on those states, what I can't do is just walk away and close the door and make the person guess, you know, why their prescription isn't being filled, and which is the fact pattern in the case which a court decided. So those are state by state, and maybe Alana could tell me exactly what the Ohio exception is, but that's generally the way those exceptions work.
Yeah, Alana?
Yeah, generally in Ohio, it really relates more to being able to prefer people of the same religion in certain religious context in hiring, much like federal law allows. It's really a restatement of that in our state law, preferring folks of the same religion in certain religious positions. Excuse me, religious positions.
Like the secretary at the church.
That's right, of the church or someone performing a religious function at a mosque or a temple.
House Bill 160 has been around in one form or another for a long time. What have been the objections to it? Who's opposed to it in Ohio? And what are your expectations for it going forward, Alana?
Yeah, it has been around for some time, but we do have a different momentum in this legislative assembly. We have had a very positive hearing that happened on January 31st. More than 150 people came out to support the bill's passage, and testimony was heard from a variety of diverse voices, both individuals who experienced discrimination firsthand to illustrate those harms, but we've also seen a step up from the business community, recognizing that not having these laws in place actually makes Ohio less competitive as a state for attracting and retaining the best and brightest talents. We are seeing young people who are moving to other states because they don't want to put down roots in a state that doesn't acknowledge LGBTQ equality at the fundamental non-discrimination level. We are seeing that businesses have a hard time, even if they have a wonderful employment policy themselves. How can they attract someone from one of the coasts, perhaps, to come invest in a job in Ohio when there are no housing protections and there are no public accommodation protections in place? So we've really seen the business community step forward, provide testimony. The Ohio Chamber of Commerce, in fact, testified in support of HB 160 at that hearing because it knows that this is not just the right thing to do, it's good for business and our economy.
So your expectations, though, I read that the Ohio Chamber of Commerce is backing this legislation, but it's also a very conservative Republican controlled legislature.
It is. It is. We still have challenges, but I also appreciate that over the course of many years, more and more people have come to know an LGBTQ person in their family, to recognize that they have a transgender nephew, perhaps, or that they have a lesbian neighbor. And that has really changed and opened people's hearts and minds. Ultimately, I see this conservative legislative body opening its mind and heart to perhaps passing this legislation, as well as seeing that it's a good thing to do for Ohio's economy. It's not an easy fight, but we are encouraged at the momentum we're seeing on the Ohio Fairness Act this year.
So when the Ruth Kolker, when the U.S. Supreme Court rules that the law in Colorado is constitutional.
Well, that wasn't the question, but okay.
Yeah, well, I know, but I'm just trying to figure out, it wasn't the question in this case. So what the court rules can't apply to everybody?
Well,
even in states where there are no protections?
Well, the reason the gay couple, right, in this case has a right to allege that they should be able to purchase the cake is because of a political decision by the state of Colorado to pass the public accommodation statute. So as Elena has explained to us, right, in Ohio, If you are in a community without a local non-discrimination ordinance, you do not have that right as a gay person. And I think just to remember the political point here, which Alana did such a nice job of explaining to us, this is Colorado. We forget. Colorado is home to Romer versus Evans, where the state of Colorado voters voted through a statewide initiative that they wanted to ban local communities from having non-discrimination ordinances. And the United States Supreme Court, in the first strong gay rights decision, concluded that Colorado did not have the right to preclude local cities from banning that the state of Colorado did not have the right to ban local cities from having non-discrimination ordinances. That and the reason the court reached that decision is they felt that only animus by state voters could explain against gay people, could explain why they would want to have such a rule to preclude non-discrimination treatment. So we have gone from the state of Colorado being on the front line of engaging in homophobia, right? Mm-hmm. Engaging in explicit anti-gay bias and being struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court for their anti-gay bias. We have seen them then go to be one of a dozen or so states that pass public accommodation, non-discrimination protection on a statewide basis. And so I don't know what's going to happen in Ohio. Alana is the political expert here. Usually one has to be patient if one does political activism.
Ohio is always around 30th to do something.
Right. But I think it's really important for us. I think it's important for us to remember, though, how far Colorado has come to go from being the state defending its anti-gay bias to now saying we want to be on the forefront of prohibiting anti-gay bias. And this is in a relatively short time in U.S. history.
That's right. And I think I heard you say Ohio is usually around number 30. Well, we have 28 states that have passed these successfully.
Okay.
Time for passing ours. But most recently, New Hampshire actually fully updated its law to be inclusive of gender identity or expression protections under a conservative House, conservative Republican Senate, to be signed by Governor Sununu, who is a Republican. So there is recent precedent for being able to do this. I think the times have changed. Folks are recognizing that, and it's high time that Ohio did the same.
What do you see? I mean, are you seeing it coming up in the next General Assembly again? It's not going to pass this time.
No, we're hopeful it may pass this year. We are hopeful that when our legislators return in the fall, they will continue the hearings for this bill and that we may be able to pass it out of the House to the Senate and get it to the governor's desk before he leaves office.
Yeah, that's right. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the former Speaker of the House, Cliff Rosenberger, was supportive of this, wasn't he?
Correct. He was. He was supportive of it. And frankly, there have been many Republican legislators who are supportive of it currently. It was not just Speaker Rosenberger. So we are moving full forward. We have been sending a letter a week outlining a story of discrimination or a parent's fear for their children as to why this law needs to be put in place, or a business perspective to our leadership in the House, the Senate, and to our governor. And we're going to continue those efforts and be ready for any future hearings that may come.
Are you expecting similar?
This is long overdue.
Are you expecting similar response from the new speaker, Ryan Smith?
We're hopeful. We're hopeful. Speaker Smith was on the committee that heard all of the testimony this past January, and we are hopeful that he will, like his predecessor, see the economic value of passing this now and want to support HB 160.
Any efforts afoot to, the Ohio General Assembly also has been working on a string of prohibitions of local ordinances on a number of things. The latest one that's pending is one to ban local ordinances regarding restrictions on plastic bags and single-use plastic cutlery and that kind of a thing. Has anybody talked about something like that?
We've not seen anything along those lines. And frankly, these local non-discrimination laws have been in existence for quite some time now. This is not a new phenomenon. I think that the home rule provisions are pretty clear that municipalities can do this. They've had non-discrimination protections in place, frankly, for decades. So simply updating them to include sexual orientation and gender identity or expression doesn't violate home rule principles, and we've heard nothing like what we've heard in North Carolina of a legislative action to try to local non-discrimination protection.
Alana Jokum, Executive Director for Equality Ohio, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Also, Ruth Kolker, Ohio State constitutional law professor, thanks to you as well.
Thank you, Ann.
This is WOSU on 89.7 NPR News.